The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Glorious sunshiny day here at Edstone. Beautiful, beautiful day. 71 degrees outside, so a good day to get outside. Or if you're in the States, maybe go to the beach. If you go to the beach, make sure that you don the mask, or you may be accosted by a CNN reporter chasing you down to lecture you about the coronavirus and how you're spreading the disease. You never see these reporters in New York City, in the subway, where it spreads, where it actually does spread. And you certainly don't see them citing studies that show that the possibility of this disease being transmitted outdoors, it's less than whatever, 1%. It's like down into the 10th of a percentage point. And you turn on the news, I saw all the clips, and I'm not going to play one of them for you, sorry. But you turn on the news, and that's all that they're reporting on. Masks, of all things. Wearing a mask, and then a lot of them, they're being exposed, these reporters, they're being exposed as frauds, putting the mask on when the camera is running, and then taking it off as soon as the camera stops. That happened, I think, at a beach in Alabama. Then there was another report. I believe he was in Wisconsin. He had his mask on, and someone passing by pointed out to him that his cameraman did not have a mask on. So he's there pointing out all these people. He's shocked that these people outdoors aren't wearing masks. And yet these frauds, these hypocrites, they get in front of the camera. They put on the mask. They lecture the United States of America. They make fun of beachgoers, whether in the Ozarks or Alabama. And Alabama, just comparing the states, I know there's a lot of differences between New York and Florida or New York and Alabama. But Alabama, I think, has 580 deaths total. I don't know the statewide population, but it has to be a few million, I would think. 580 deaths, and New York's pushing 30,000. Every single one of these roving reporters should be in New York City chasing down Governor Cuomo, asking him about their nursing home massacre. But here they are on beaches, of all places. They're shocked and appalled that people would go to the beach, that people would go outside, that people would enjoy glorious sunshine and fresh air, all those things that actually help to build and to strengthen your immune system. It's just outrageous. The fake news, Donald Trump was onto something when he coined that phrase a while back. Fake news, we're going to talk today about fake history as well. The modern interpretation of history, as my father said on the Key of David just a few weeks ago. First, a little bit of feedback from you listeners. It says, a day without the Trumpet Daily is like a day without sunshine. How about that? A beautiful, sunshiny day. And spiritually, we certainly do need to let God light up our lives with his truth. You look at the physical, there's lessons that we can take away from it in the spiritual sense. The prophet Jeremiah said that God's word was like a lamp that lit up the path so that he could see where he's going. Another one here says, good morning, Mr. Flurry and staff. Keep shining the light in this dark and evil world. We eat the food given from the Philadelphia Church of God. We out in the field are inspired and encouraged with all the messages. Bravo, it says. Another one says, Even Winston Churchill and the old king knew that God won us the war. This is in response to that Telegraph piece yesterday from the prominent historian, the son-in-law of the queen, who said that there was no miracle at Dunkirk. God wasn't involved here. Listen, it's 80 years on. We're at the 80-year anniversary, and we know so much more than we did back then. We'll dwell on that a little bit more, as I say, in just a moment. Another listener says, this is such a great program to start every day with, along with praying fervently. The days are growing darker for mankind, but our only hope is through this program and building a personal relationship with God and understanding His purpose for mankind. And then another one says, it's good to have you back in Edstone. Maybe that was from you, Sam. Thank you. Another response here. This is following the commencement. One of our graduates wrote this in response to the commencement last week. It says, I just wanted to thank you for the address on Sunday. I'm going through your trumpet brief write-up of it again now, and really felt the need to thank you for giving us this send-off for life. It says it was one of the most impactful speeches of my life, extremely powerful and inspiring. That's the Douglas MacArthur commencement that we had on last Monday's program. It's also, I believe, available in a video format on the trumpet.com website as well. Another one here from a longtime listener. And she writes, when you were going through the Lincoln biography a few months ago, I related to you that I had seen Carl Sandburg in person when I was in junior high school. I think this goes back to the 1950s and 60s. But she says here, now you've been talking about General Douglas MacArthur with the graduation address. You mentioned his address to Congress in 1951. She says, well, guess what? Yes, that very day, I heard that speech over the radio when my sixth grade teacher, Miss Martin, brought in a radio to the classroom, and we listened to that whole incredible speech together. She says, I remember many of the quotes you mentioned from the speech, and I can still hear in my mind the way he said, old soldiers never die, they just fade away. She says, I was born in 1940. I was living during a time when my family and teachers loved and taught us history. They loved history, and they taught it to the children. Richard Palmer last night in his trumpet brief, he wrote, I'm glad he did, he wrote about this this Telegraph article. Dunkirk, no miracle. 80 years ago, as Richard brought out in his brief, 80 years ago, the whole nation paused to beseech God, to pray for a miracle, to go to church, to ask for God's intervention. Richard had embedded within his article on the website this video from 1940. There was a National Day of Prayer. In 1940, the whole nation got involved in this. Here's a snippet from that short video, clip 9.
The Empire responds to the King's call. And at Westminster Abbey, heart of the Empire, the statesmen, the soldiers, the ambassadors, and hundreds of ordinary men and women join the mighty congregation. Her Majesty Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands arrives a few moments before their Majesties. No one here today could foresee the grave news that has come from Belgium. All the more, it is well for us to show the world that we still believe in divine guidance, in the laws of Christianity. May we find inspiration and faith from this solemn day.
That's from 1940. A video. Something you'd see before you go in and watch a movie. How times have changed. Here's the announcer talking about everyone getting involved, everyone beseeching God. And how that we need to show the world, the whole world, that we still believe in divine guidance. We need to set an example for the world, said Britain in 1940. We need to get God involved. We need to bring God into the center. And let me tell you, they needed God's help. Those men were stranded. They were stranded in Dunkirk. And like Richard brought out in his trumpet brief, the very best estimate was, well, maybe we can save 40 or 50,000 of them. As it was, almost 400,000 men were brought back by this armada of ships. A lot of them civilians, rolling up their sleeves, sailing across the channel and back. And miraculously, the weather was just perfect. Perfect for the Brits, for the Allies, not so much for the German Luftwaffe, the Air Force. They were going to bomb them to smithereens. This is how the Telegraph reported it in July of 1940. It says, those who are accustomed to the channel testify to the strangeness of this calm, the calm and the weather, that is. They are deeply impressed by the phenomenon of nature by which it became possible for tiny craft to go back and forth in safety. It says, I have talked to officers and men who have gotten safely back to England, and all of them tell of these two phenomena. The first was the great storm which broke over the Flanders, on Tuesday, May 28. And the other was the great calm which settled on the English Channel during the days following. So this storm that grounded the German aircraft, and then the calm across the channel that allowed for all these vessels to go back and forth, shuttling British soldiers back to the island. Winston Churchill called it the miracle of deliverance. This was a miracle, he said. The Prime Minister. Richard wrote this. It says, after the evacuation massively exceeded expectations, the nation returned to church for a day of thanksgiving on June 9th. So they had the day of prayer, national prayer, beseeching God for a miracle. And then after the miracle, they went to God and gave thanks. They went to God for praise and thanksgiving. It says, one thing can be certain about tomorrow's Thanksgiving in our churches. This is the Telegraph writing 80 years ago. It says, from none will the thanks ascend with greater sincerity or deeper fervor than from the officers and men who have seen the hand of God. They have seen the hand of God, said the Telegraph 80 years ago. Powerful to save, delivering them from the hands of a mighty foe who, humanly speaking, had them utterly at his mercy. Here are these soldiers, hundreds of thousands of them, at the mercy of the German Air Force. And yet here they were, shuttled across the channel. Miraculously, said the Prime Minister. Miraculously, said the Telegraph. Miraculously, said the royalty in Britain. Miraculously, said the ordinary Briton. This was, as Richard brought out in the brief, this was common right across the mainstream of British society. Matthew 16, I went through a few of these verses yesterday, and then we included it in a video that we recorded for television as well. It says here in verse 1, this is Matthew 16, the Pharisees also with the Sadducees came, and tempting, desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. So, and you can look over in Mark 8, the parallel passage, and see that when these scholars, these experts, these religious teachers, when they came and asked this question, it says Jesus sighed deeply, or he groaned. He groaned in the spirit. Here we go again. The Son of God was in their presence. The Son of God was performing all these miracles. by a miracle, thousands had just been fed physically. And yet here come these skeptics, these scoffers, who said, well, just show us a sign so that we can really know, so that we can really know that God was involved, that God's hand was in this. Verse 2, he answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red, and in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. Oh, you hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky, but can you not discern the signs of the times? You can forecast the weather, but you can't discern the signs of the times. You won't believe God and his prophetic word. You won't believe God's interpretation of history, of prophecy. Verse 4, I don't think I got to this one yesterday, but it says, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and there shall no sign be given unto it but the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. So here is Christ reminding these very religious people. And he said, look, a wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. What did he mean by an adulterous generation? Well, he was telling these Jews that at one time, you were married to God. At one time, you understood God's truth. You had an understanding of history. They certainly understood the prophecies of the Old Testament that pointed to a Messiah. But what happened? Well, spiritually speaking, they committed adultery. They turned to adulterous thinking. And the further and further they got away from God, the more skewed and distorted was their understanding of history, of prophecy. If you look at Britain, you want to talk about a glorious history these past 2-3 centuries, the rise of the empire. Who can deny that God's hand was involved from the beginning? Now, those blessings are being taken away. Curses have set in. And then you have these scholars today coming along and saying, even with respect to this glorious history, there wasn't really any glory there. Certainly not God's glory. No miracle to report on here. The Dunkirk evacuation? No, it wasn't a miracle, says the Telegraph today. It says here, the Dunkirk story is now legendary. Here's the modern historian, the modern interpretation, a member of the royal family in Britain. It says, the qualities of courage and resilience in the face of extreme adversity are part of our identity, how we think of ourselves. This is exemplified by the little ships, the story of how a civilian armada helped save an army. Some say it was a miracle. An event so extraordinary that it surpasses all human powers. The truth is far more gutsy and practical and utterly remarkable. It was an almost superhuman effort conducted by ordinary men and women. So the human beings are, well, they're superhuman. But God, he didn't really have a position. He didn't really do anything. In 1940, the Telegraph didn't think that way. And I'd submit to you that the Telegraph probably didn't think that way in 1980, in the year 2000. But here's where we are today. The modern interpretation of history, as my father said on the Key of David. Modern intellectuals just removing God from the history. Just deleting God from the story. Coming up with their own interpretation, a godless interpretation. That program, my father's on this subject, It's from May 1st, so it's just a couple weeks ago. And we have a few clips from that. Hopefully you got a chance to see the program in its entirety. But here's my father from a couple weeks ago, clip one.
By what authority do historians leave God and the Bible out of history? I mean, after all, if you're going to write like that and you're going to write a history of the country or the world, well, by what authority do they have to just leave God and the Bible out of it?
So this member of the royal family, he comes along and he writes an article for the Telegraph yesterday, the 80th anniversary of that Dunkirk evacuation. And on what authority did he delete God from the story, from the history? As I said yesterday, he's the one that presides over a lot of the historical sites in Britain. The people of Britain look to him in a literal sense. What authority did he have to say that God didn't intervene or interfere in the affairs of men back in May and early June of 1940? In Romans 1 and verse 19, my father goes through a few of these verses in his program, the one I played a clip of there. And you'll see that here in just a moment. But look at what Paul says in Romans 1:19. It says, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. The Revised Standard says that it should be so plain. It's so plain because God has shown us. It's so obvious what was happening over France, the storm that grounded the German aircraft, and then over the channel, a complete calm in the waters. Should be obvious. And you can't expect even people or commentators from 1940 to understand the truth of God's purpose and plan being worked out here below, because in a general sense, God has allowed for mankind to go it alone without him. But he does intervene where necessary to fulfill his purpose and his plan as it's working out here below, to paraphrase what Winston Churchill said. And he said that before Congress. He said it before Congress. What is that, clip 10, Sam? Go ahead and play that one.
If you will allow me to use other language, I will say that he must indeed have a blind soul who cannot see that some great purpose and design is being worked out here below, of which we have the honor to be the faithful servants. It is not given to us to peer into the mysteries of the future. Still I avow my hope and faith, sure and inviolate, that in the days to come, the British and American peoples will, for their own safety and for the good of all, walk together in majesty, in justice, and in peace.
That's 1941. You heard about how the Telegraph responded to the Dunkirk evacuation in 1940. And there's Winston Churchill in front of the U.S. Congress, December 26, 1941. So that would have been a couple weeks after Pearl Harbor. And I would imagine there were quite a few Americans following that attack that stepped up their church attendance, their Bible reading, their prayers to God, praying for God's intervention, praying for the hand of God to save us. And there's Churchill. He didn't understand the purpose of God's plan, but he understood enough to say that you must be a blind soul. You must be blind if you think there's not some great purpose being worked out here below. And you'll notice in that clip I just played, He talked about the United States and Britain. These two nations, these brothers, that should be together, he said. They were fighting in that great war together, arm in arm. And the truth of it is, God did intervene multiple times to save us. But it won't happen this time around. And you can see why. Look at our people. Look at how ungrateful we are. We've turned our backs on God. And now we get out there and we proudly say, even with respect to our own history, God really, he wasn't involved. Doesn't that make it exciting to study history? When you delete God from out of the story, that's the most exciting part. And then we wonder why young people today aren't interested in history. We wonder why they're not interested in studying it. Well, you scholars came along and you wanted to erase God from out of the story. That makes it meaningless. That makes it without purpose. Now, this world is descending into chaos and darkness, as I covered yesterday. And God's allowing it all to teach us a lesson. You can even see God's hand in that. He's pleading with us. He's pleading with us. And here we are, erasing him from the Dunkirk evacuation. Of all things, it should be so obvious, so clear. You know, you mentioned Churchill there. Historians today, they want to come along and say, well, Churchill, you know, he wasn't a churchgoer, which is true. But he certainly read from the Bible. And he had the Bible read to him when he was a young boy from his nanny. But here today, they want to say he was agnostic or someone who believes that God really didn't have a hand in human events. And then you go back to Churchill himself, as I just played for you. You go back to Churchill's writings, and you see what he said. And the historians that don't want for you to believe that he believed that God was working out some kind of purpose and design here below. The modern historian that doesn't want you to see that, he just won't include it in his book. He'll frame it just right. It's just like the news reporter for CNN. They're very careful and particular about what appears on the screen, and that's it. Once the lights are off and the cameras turn down, well, then it's fine for those people, like Chris Cuomo, to leave and to go to his second house, even when he's infected, maskless. Or the governor of Michigan, her husband's, evidently, he's traveling all over the state, going boating to the second house, he's raking leaves, he's violating every single rule that his wife has imposed upon the state. Hypocrites. Fraud, so many of them. They're lying. And there's a spirit behind it. And there's a spirit behind this revising of the historical record. Fake history. That's what it is. Churchill said, I have a feeling sometimes that some guiding hand has interfered. I have a feeling that we have a guardian because we have a great cause, and we shall have that guardian so long as we serve that cause faithfully. And what a cause it is. Those are words from a British prime minister 80 years ago. That's not that long. 2-3 generations. And yet look at where we are today. Churchill knew he had an important work to do. He knew in many ways that he was serving God. He knew he was saving Western civilization. He made comments about saving Christian civilization. Obviously, he didn't understand the truth contained in Mystery of the Ages. But what a difference between the leader from 1940, 1941, and the leaders of today. The prophet Daniel said, "The Most High rules in the kingdom of men." And what do men say today? The Most High, he doesn't even exist. If he does, he's not involved in anything. Certainly he wasn't involved in Dunkirk. Verse 21 of Romans 1, it says, "Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened." See, they knew God, but they didn't honor him. They didn't give thanks to him. And so what happens? Well, we become futile in our thinking. Vain imaginations, it says in this chapter. Foolishness. The Bible says the fool says there's no God. My father said this in that program 2 weeks ago, clip two.
If you forget God and you leave God out of history, the Bible tells you you're going to have confusion. And even one prominent critic said you're going to have chaos. That's very true.
Chaos and confusion, or as Paul said, your foolish heart or mind goes dark. It just goes dark. We become vain and futile in our thinking, empty, and of course, proud and vain, filled with pride. That's what surfaces when we delete God from the record. We get rid of God, and then what are we left with? Pride and vanity. That's all. And of course, together with it, futility in thinking and reasoning. There's no soundness in it, as I said last week. Sickness from head to toe. My father went on to say this, clip three.
Most people think, well, the historian is a scribe, that he just sits down and writes about facts. But he is not a scribe. He's a judge of what he's writing. He's a judge. And he is that final authority.
He's judging what he's reporting on. He's deciding. He's interpreting. It's easy. Now, again, I praised historians just a few days ago. We need more historians to put things in perspective with respect to this pandemic. Yet at the same time, you see the same flawed human reasoning in history now, because of the minds that have gone dark. The senseless minds were darkened, it says in the Revised Standard Version. And yet you pick up a history book off the shelf and you just automatically assume, well, he's just reporting the facts, right? He's a scribe. He's writing it down. And there's no real editorializing, is there? Well, don't be so sure. There is an agenda with so many of them. Sam reminded me of this example from the Sandberg biography. And if you recall, we only had two or three classes, I think, that we posted at the trumpet.com website. But if you recall, I was going through the six-volume set, or at least the first volume or two from the old version, 1925, 1926. And then the abridged version came along 30 years later when Sandberg put or just made one volume. And of course, to give him the benefit of the doubt, he does have to take a lot of information out to condense it down to just the one volume. But Sam was saying that in sitting through those book club lessons that we had and hearing the examples from the longer version that were left out, he just lost interest in the one volume version because so many of the things that were left out were the most inspiring parts. And I'll give you an example of this. This is from this is volume one. Just bear with me as I do a little bit of reading. We'll transition here to book club for a moment. But this is volume one of Carl Sandburg's six-volume biography on Lincoln. And here it is, this page 163, marked up heavily in my copy because it's about Lincoln's education. And it's fascinating. It says he had a keen, tenacious memory. He could review with immensity of fact and impression all the panoramas and sketches of his past years. And on this record, he could turn the scrutiny of a developing and sharpening eye of analysis. He was growing as inevitably as summer corn in Illinois. It says here further on, a mover came by, heading west so he's developing mentally, intellectually. This is all part of his education. Of course, in most ways, Lincoln was self-taught. He had very little formal schooling. I think all total, it was something like a year, maybe. But this was a deep thinker. This was a studier. This was a learned man who read the Bible, who studied the Bible, who studied law, God's law and man's law. It says here, a mover came by, heading west in a covered wagon. He sold Lincoln a barrel. Lincoln afterward explained, I did not want it, but to oblige him, I bought it and paid him $0.50 for it. So here comes this mover, wants to get rid of a barrel, and Lincoln didn't want it, but for some reason, he bought the barrel. It says, later, emptying rubbish out of the barrel, he found books at the bottom, Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England. Sandburg says, by accident, by a streak of luck, he was owner to one of the most famous books that young men studying law had to read, first of all. It had sneaked into his hands without his expecting it. He remembered his Springfield lawyer friend, John T. Stewart, saying the law student should read Blackstone first. And so he just came upon this copy of Blackstone at the bottom of that barrel. Says he remembered how he walked barefoot to the courthouse at Boonville down in Indiana and heard a distinguished lawyer make a speech to a jury with logic, sarcasm, and tears, and how he wished, deep wishes, he might someday be a lawyer like that. And now the book, it says, Blackstone's Commentaries, had jumped into his hands out of an empty barrel as if to say, take me and read me. You were made for a lawyer. That's from volume one of Sandburg's biography on Abraham Lincoln. He just came upon Blackstone's book. Now, as I would bring out in the book club, what fascinates me from that little tidbit of history is the fact that you see God's hand. God used that man when he became president to save the Union. This was during the time when God was just pouring out blessings upon Manasseh. And so what went into his education? You see God's fingerprints all over it. God was involved. Now, the modern historian doesn't think so, and we know this. But here in this 1955 version, here's how that history is covered. And evidently, this is the same author, Sandburg, putting the material together into one volume. It says about Lincoln, he was growing as inevitably as summer corn in Illinois. I read that bit from the first volume. But then it says, leaning against the doorpost of a store to which few customers came, he was growing in silence as corn grows. He had bought at an auction in Springfield a copy of Blackstone, the first of the law books to read. And then it goes on and talks about this exchange he has with an individual about studying law. He bought a copy of Blackstone at an auction. So it's not even the same. Now, Sandburg got some criticism, even back at the time he wrote the six volumes. other historians who thought he didn't cite enough of his sources. You can look at those six volumes and see that there's not, you know, this long section at the back that has all the sources included. Maybe he did a little further research. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe he put in a little more research and found out that the barrel story didn't happen. But this is just one example of several. Like I said, Sam said by the time you got through all these incredible events of history revolving around Abraham Lincoln's life and his development as a young man, his preparation for what he would do later in life, with so many of those significant events left out of the abridged version, as I say, you begin to look, or rather lose interest, in the more modern interpretation. You wonder, you can look at Wikipedia and see that he won a Pulitzer Prize for The War Years, the four volumes on the War Years. And then in Wikipedia, it says that he was also criticized by the modern scholars who said that, well, he was basing too much of it on just conjecture, as if the modern interpretation is just simply the facts. We think the modern historian, he must have every advantage because he's got more sources, and you have to be so precise and exact these days, and to some extent that's true. But if, when you frame it, you leave God out of the history, you leave God out of the picture, you're missing the most important part, the most important component of that narrative. My father went on to say in this program from 2 weeks ago, where did we leave off? I think clip four.
But the greatest crisis of all is that they omit God in the Bible. And if we don't see that today, we're soon going to see it. And I mean very soon.
That, as he said there, is the greatest crisis of all. When you erase God and the Bible. And that's what we're seeing happen. These beachgoers, by the way, down in Alabama, there was one of them, and they're mocked for this by the radical left. The one who said, you know what, as far as this sickness, as far as wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, my feeling is if it's my time to go, then that must be okay. I must be okay with that. And I think she brought God into it. And of course, they're portrayed as just being ignorant Southerners who would dare go outside without a mask. Alabama has how many deaths? 580 for the whole state, for the whole duration of this crisis. And yet those people would be held up as just ignorant fools because they're not the educated elite, like the ones reporting the news, like the ones putting on their mask when the camera's rolling and then quickly taking it off when it stops. We're so smart. We're so brilliant. We're smarter than God, even. Verse 18 of Romans 1 says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness." The Revised Standard Version says there, regarding verse 18, it says they suppress the truth. They hold the truth, it says in the King James, or hold it down. They suppress it. They do this knowingly. They bury it. We saw this up close during the lawsuit over Mystery of the Ages. All of these worldwide Church of God officials who were lying to the court, who lied during depositions, talked about how they wanted to use Mystery of the Ages. This was valuable property to them, they said. Even though in their writings, they talked about how they wanted to bury it, how they wanted to keep it out of circulation so that no one could read it. You see all these stories today about YouTube wanting to delete. I saw on the BBC this morning, they have the misinformation reporter. So here comes this woman. She's the misinformation specialist. And she's right there to debunk all of the things that, well, generally what President Trump says. And then a few other people. So much. If they don't like it, let's just blot it out. That's the way Satan thinks. That's not to say everything on the internet is true. It's just full of lies. But Satan, if it is the truth, he wants to blot it out. So here are these, as I say, these reporters that are out lecturing people, and they don't even have the facts. They won't even report the truth about the disease. And it's the same with history. And it's getting worse. It's getting worse because of 2 Timothy 3. It's getting worse because we're farther and farther removed from God. And so there's no soundness in it. There's no soundness to our thinking. My father in this program, he, as I said, he went through a few verses in Romans 1 as well. And here's what he says, clip 5.
Notice, Paul wrote about it. He wrote about the evolutionary view, you could say, long before Charles Darwin. Many of these verses in Paul's book of Romans are prophetic as well. This one certainly is. Notice verse 18 of Romans 1. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold the truth in unrighteousness. Hold the truth in unrighteousness. That word hold means to hold down or suppress. Suppress. They suppress the truth. They omit it. They interpret it. They really do some terrible things to get God out of the picture. Man has always done that, anciently and in modern times. But it's worse now in the modern times. They just eliminate God and the Bible from their history. That's modern history.
That's modern history, he says there. They're doing some terrible things to get God out of the picture. And Paul says in verse 18, he says that the wrath of God is revealed. In other words, God has a response. The wrath of God will be revealed. The world is going to reap what it is now sowing. There is cause and effect. If we sin, there's a penalty. We don't get away with anything. So God's pleading. And what must God think? The God who intervened to save hundreds of thousands of soldiers, British, American. He did it multiple times. And how ungrateful we are to now say, nope, no miracle here, nothing really to see here, just kind of happened. We'll give the credit to the admiral. How about that? We'll give the credit to the ordinary British citizens. How about that? Certainly not to God. My father went on to say, clip 6.
God says when people suppress the truth, His wrath is going to enter into the picture. This is the truth of the living God. People are not going to be held unaccountable for omitting God. People who speak with authority and have the opportunity and responsibility to get the truth to the people, they're going to be held accountable by God. Can you believe that? And he, in other words, he says there's certainly going to be accountability for people who should be teaching their own people and are doing just the opposite of what they should be doing.
We should be teaching our children about these miracles from God. And if you're in God's church, you've certainly seen the hand of God, as my father went on to say in this same program, clip 7.
The historical method, as they talk about, is simply an hypothesis, quote, that God has never and does not now intervene in or determine the course of history. That's their guess. God never intervenes. You'll never, there's nothing, no superpower that intervenes in this world. Absolutely not. Well, I'll tell you, he has been for over 75 years intervening in this world, and anybody ought to be able to see it and could see it and prove it if they were just willing to do so. Our work is certainly seen to that truth.
Yeah, we've lived it. We've witnessed it. You can read about it in Raising the Ruins, other books, other booklets. God's mighty hand. God intervened. Ezekiel 33 brings it out. He intervened through a watchman that the people chose back in the days of World War II to save Israel, the nations of Israel. Today, it's a watchman in God's church. And there's not going to be any saving of nations this time around. But God is warning. God is pleading. And there is time for the individual to wake up. There is time for you individually to do something with this message. Verse 22 of Romans 1 says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man. They changed the glory of God. These fools, they think they're wise, but when their foolish hearts are darkened, what are they? They're just fools, that's all. Fools that worship human nature, that worship self. It's worse than that. If you understand 2 Corinthians 4, they're worshiping the God of this world. Verse 25 says, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshiped and served the creation more than the Creator. This, like my father said, this is prophecy as well. This isn't just good doctrine from the Apostle Paul. This is happening now. One final clip from the program, clip 8.
And now 55 colleges and universities required a course in American history, and 78% of the students got by without taking any history at all. It's getting boring. It's disinteresting. They've taken God out, and it's confusing. It's confusing. And the students are bored, and they just, well, without God, it's just confusing. It's chaotic. Thank God that God has proven himself.
You see, you take God out of it, and it becomes chaotic and confusing. And as he said there, it's just boring. It's not exciting. The abridged version, it's not as exciting as that first volume. Not for me. I haven't gone through all 6 volumes yet, but that's inspiring to me. When you see God's hand, whether he's working through Abraham Lincoln or Winston Churchill or the Dunkirk evacuation, you remove that and it loses its real excitement. Verse 28 here it says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient. That last part there, it means to do those things that are improper, that are lawless. Their foolish hearts are darkened. Reprobate minds, that means a mind without understanding, a mind void of judgment. Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages about modern education, he said, little or nothing is taught about God. But even in the elementary grades, the basic concept, the approach to knowledge, is evolution. Is it any wonder then that the scholarly do not know who or what is God? They believe what they have been taught. Is it any wonder that our young people today are no longer interested, even in their own history? They're taught little or nothing about God. The most essential knowledge there is, and it's been deleted. It's been erased. And now you've got this very modern interpretation of history. It's exactly the way the devil wants it. Just blot it out. Just erase it. Just erase God from the picture. Well, God's very much alive and well. And if you're listening to this program, if you're viewing the Key of David or you're visiting the Trumpet website, you know, as my father said in one of those clips, you know that God's work is being done on this earth today. All of it certainly does highlight the importance of not just history with God in the record, but the importance of revelation when it comes to, as I said in that soundness message last week, when it comes to any reasoning that we get involved in. You have to reason together with God, as Isaiah said, or you get into what's described here in Romans 1. That's all we have time for on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll look forward to seeing you again tomorrow.